This episode of Intelligent Medicine is brought to you by True Niagen Pro. We stress our bodies all the time at the cellular level with overeating, lack of sleep, and lack of exercise. These stressors damage our cells, depleting a vital coenzyme for cellular health called NAD. True Niagen Pro is clinically proven to increase NAD, which supports your cellular resilience and energizes your cells to help maintain your cellular health. True Niagen Pro, cellular defense for life. For more information and to purchase, go to drhoffman.com/TrueNiagenPro. That's true, T-R-U, drhoffman.com/TrueNiagenPro. Welcome to today's Intelligent Medicine Podcast. I'm your host, Dr. Ronald Hoffman. It's our weekly Q&A with Layla, wherein we answer your questions. And a reminder, you can send questions to radioprogram@AOL.com. Radioprogram@AOL.com is the destination for questions. That provides us with fodder for our weekly Q&A. How you doing, Layla?
Okay, Dr. Hoffman. How are you?
Good. Well, you know,
all things considered,
Yeah, because we're broadcasting. Some of you may be listening to this a little later, but we're broadcasting in the wake of certainly still
the riots,
the coronavirus, but now like the biblical plagues of ancient Egypt. We add to our woes the urban riots. Mm-hmm. And I have to say, and you're located in Queens.
Yep.
And part of the time out in Long Island where you're building a house. Mm-hmm. I'm here in Midtown Manhattan, and I have to say, I'm in a little bit of a dour mood today because last night, as I was settling down to dinner, the sounds of the helicopters hovering overhead were incessant, and then the sirens began, and they were rushing up and down the avenues and cross streets.
Yeah.
And and I knew something bad was going on, and then I turned on the TV, and I watched with fascination as the national reports were talking about my very neighborhood, some of the stores and storefronts that I frequent, for shopping.
Yeah.
And pass on a daily basis going to work at the office. Windows were shattered. Goods were confiscated. Broken mannequins on the floor. And then I did a little reconnaissance walk before doing this podcast this afternoon.
Mm-hmm.
And Madison Avenue, it's a war zone. Fifth Avenue, this is the most exclusive real estate in the country, practically. The shopping district parks along, the big stores, Saks and these fancy watch and jewelry stores, they're boarded up. Some of them having already incurred damage, some of them preemptively boarded up. It's a really sad spectacle, and it wasn't bad enough that all these retail stores have been closed during the lockdown. You can't go into them.
Yes.
Now,
nope.
They're not only they're closed, but they're looted.
Yeah.
So it's just disheartening. And I have to say, on a personal note, I live in New York City, but I'm originally from Santa Monica, California, which is a quiet little beach community that I grew up in. And, there have been problems, during my lifetime. I mean, there were riots in the 60s, we'd watch on TV as urban centers were burning and, National Guardsmen were called up. But Santa Monica was always a quiet little enclave, of Los Angeles that never really got affected. And, and now it's front and center, and a lot of the fancy stores there were targets of the rioters, and so I just feel
it's terrible.
Disheartened.
It's just terrible.
Yep. We are living in some very, very, very turbulent times. So for today's theme is continues to some extent be coronavirus because that hasn't gone away. I mean, it's almost like, it seems like, oh yeah, you know, coronavirus is over. Now what dominates the news is rioting and protests.
Exactly. Coronavirus is on page two, maybe page seven.
But it's still persistent. We still have questions about that from a health standpoint. But what's happening through the natural evolution of things is that we are getting questions of a general nature because, you know, all these problems pre-existed coronavirus and they will outlive coronavirus. Incidentally, if during the broadcast you hear sounds, funny sounds, there are helicopters that are hovering overhead, New York is preparing for another night of potential mayhem. And you'll also hear periodic sirens.
We even have a curfew.
Yeah. Yep. And we have an early curfew tonight. So
I'm at 11.
You're eyewitness reporter here, Dr. Ronald Hoffman. You know, but I think on the 21st floor, it's unlikely that a brick will be thrown through the window. I feel pretty safe here. You know? So anyway, so let's hear the first question, please.
Oh, okay. We've got one from Dharma. Dharma writes, I've been looking for a good multi for a long time, and I finally settled on Protocol for Life Ortho Multigreens, which you highly recommend. However, I didn't realize that it contains about 125 milligrams of organic spirulina. Mm-hmm. Now, Dr. Andrew Weil says that we should avoid spirulina because it's been linked to neurological disease, that it contains traces of neurotoxin BMAA, and that this BMAA is also found in blue-green algae. Mm-hmm. And animal studies show that this particular constituent can lead to neurological changes. Mm-hmm. And what do you say to that, Dr. Hoffman?
Okay, so let me give you a little background on this question, because it came up last week when we were doing a little pre-production for the show, and I said, let me not take a flying leap on this question, because I'm not that familiar with the explanation of why spirulina can be safely included as a constituent in a supplement. I referred the question to our resident expert on this, who's Dr. Neil Levin, who is, he's actually the research director. I don't know what exactly his title is, but he's the supplement guy for Protocol for Life Balance, aka Now Foods. And he's just one of these, real expert individuals on the supplement marketplace. And I'm glad I did because, first of all, I said, well, you know, should I even talk about this? Because I don't want to cast aspersions on your supplement, you know. And he said, no, please do. Let's get it out in the open. So he sent a detailed response, which you have, Layla, too. Okay, so the issue is with blue-green algae, which has been contaminated with a substance whose initials are BMAA. I don't know what the full name of that is, but it's probably a tongue twister. And BMAA has actually been implicated in neurological symptoms. It even has been implicated in ALS. That sounds really bad. But this is
Garrett's disease,
Now, so what this suggests is that you got to be careful because blue-green algae, you know, it's basically pond scum, And it can be neurotoxic. Okay, but he says, while blue-green algae has reportedly been contaminated with BMAA, he feels that Dr. Weil's statements are not very well researched. He says this is something that his company has looked at, and rest assured that we have investigated these issues and have assured the safety of our spirulina. He says BMAA is not in the spirulina species that they use specifically, which is not grown in Guam or Florida. Those are places where they've actually documented BMAA contamination. And so traditionally, spirulina, they say, was wild harvested from a Mexican lake. Well, then, you know, it could be a little problematic. But now it's cultivated worldwide in rigorously clean hydroponic conditions.
There you go. Grown in water. But clean. Controlled
circumstances, not just from open water. And it's tested for heavy metals, microbial contaminants, microcystins, which I guess are bad things, and aflatoxins. Aflatoxins can contaminate peanuts too.
Hard on the liver.
he says that at a parts per billion level of detection, they check for this, the microcystins and the aflatoxins, which are bad things, are checked for. They do, you know, product testing. You know, they get a batch of whatever spirulina they put into the mixing vat with the other constituents of the multivitamin. It's clean, and they've documented that. He says the issues that Dr. Wild is concerned with are appropriate for wild harvested blue-green algae from open lakes and ponds, such as Klamath Lake in Oregon. Okay, that's, yeah. I actually think there's a brand, you know, Klamath something something. And that might be a concern, I don't know. But not when cultivated varieties are farmed in controlled environments using clean filtered water. Blah, 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 blah. You know, he refers us to a study from, in the scientific literature. They were unable to detect BMAA. Right. You know, so,
from Aquatic Biosystems Journal. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. So, and that's, you know, I think a rigorous scientific investigation. You know, he goes on and on to all the precautions they take. The organic spirulina farms have greenhouses covering the growing pools, so everything's protected from airborne organisms, the long pools of water, which have added nutrients from selected and organic compliant plant sources. And anyway, he really waxes eloquent on this. And his conclusion is this additional information will likely reassure people that Dr. Weil's well-meaning caution, because he's a respected leader in this field, but I don't think he is quite, has the depth that, Neil Levin has in terms of understanding how the industry takes precautions over this.
Yes.
So, you know, we can't make a blanket statement about spirulina is bad. And I thank him for that clarification. And spirulina also may have some other benefits. It certainly has a detoxifying effect. Mm-hmm. It's, you know, I don't think it's some kind of magic panacea against all misfortune, as some manufacturers may claim, but it's got some benefits. So he says, thank you for the opportunity to share our information with your audience and assuage this concern.
Yeah. You very know, eloquently written.
Yeah. Yeah. I just, and, you know, I can post this if anybody's interested. You know, he'd be happy to share it with our listeners, but lest they be concerned about spirulina. And it's an issue that comes up, you know, is unfortunately, because some people are less scrupulous about testing for impurities in their blue-green algae products, it's cast aspersions on all the different brands.
Yeah. Yeah. All right. Dharma, we hope that answers your question.
And let's take a moment to allow one of our sponsors an opportunity to share this important message with you. Here goes. This episode of Intelligent Medicine is brought to you by ProPax with NT Factor, a complete vitamin and mineral formula. NT Factor is the only nutritional formula clinically proven to reduce fatigue, whatever the cause, whether it be age, illness, or just being run down. NT Factor repairs damaged cells, restores healthy bacteria in your digestive tract. Clinical trials have shown NT Factor reduces fatigue by almost half, and it even reverses some symptoms of aging. I've been taking NT Factor for years, and now the 45-day money-back guarantee, you have nothing to lose. To order, call 800-982-9158, that's 800-982-9158, or go to ntfactor.com, that's ntfactor.com. Thanks for listening, and thanks for supporting our sponsors. They're what make Intelligent Medicine a continuing free resource to you, and we thank our partners for that. Mm. So back to questions. What's next, Layla?
We've got an email, and this person says, thank you for all of the information on coronavirus. What are your thoughts on face shields? How protective are they? Recently, you talked about that in an article on Intelligent Medicine.
Yeah.
About 15 coronavirus myths debunked.
I haven't talked that much about face shields. And out where you are, do you see people walking around with face shields?
No.
No?
Okay. Just the regular old masks.
Yeah, I'd say for every person who's wearing a mask, you know, for every 20 people who are wearing masks, maybe one person is wearing a face shield, sometimes with a mask also.
Right.
And, you know, I think the nice thing about face shields is that face shields generally protect the eyes. Now, face shields are not like space helmets, you know, like these, the, you know, the astronauts went up, you know, with like space suits and space helmets,
yeah,
like self-enclosed environments. But so literally things can come from below, but face shields are good for protecting the eyes and possibly the nose and mouth to some extent. I think that face shields might be a good, not necessarily an alternative to a mask, but maybe an add-on to a mask. They may be, frankly, overkill. You know, if you're, I mean, I see people walking down, you know, Second Avenue with face shields and masks. I know that face shields are used a lot in hospital settings.
Yes.
But usually combined with like N95 masks. So that, your eyes are protected, as well. I mean, goggles are occluding because they actually, you know, form a kind of a suction around your eyes, and may really prevent any particles from floating under the face mask, the face shield, shall we say, you know, because it's like a clear plastic. You know,
I think it's more to guard against splashes of bodily fluids, and I've seen obstetricians wear face shields, you know, in the delivery room and that kind of a thing.
Right, exactly. You know, like spills and splashes.
Yeah.
You know, rather than tiny, tiny particles. You know, look, it's imperfect, but could it, you know, afford a measure of protection? You know, maybe. But it's not a... you know, it's not a, it's just like mask. It's not, some sort of impermeable barrier against exposure.
You know, short of saran wrapping your head, but then you die from suffocation. So,
no,
you
know. Don't, folks, don't try this at home.
This plastic bag may cause suffocation.
Right.
That's right. It can.
Does my liability policy cover, you know, death by asphyxiation because of a recommendation that I made on this program? I'm not sure. I'll have to call, I'll call my attorney.
Call your lawyer.
Yeah.
Okay. All right. We've got an email from Jasmine. Hello, Dr. Hoffman. I hope this email finds you well. I purchased the Regicillin, physician strength. I have a 3-year-old and a 10-year-old. How would I dose them?
Yeah. So oregano may have some antiviral properties. You know, it,
as well as being a natural antibiotic, right?
Yeah, I would say that it's the evidence is stronger that it has antibiotic properties against bacteria and certainly against fungi. There's some interesting studies that suggest that if you aerosolize oregano, you know, essential oil oregano in the air, that it can actually combat staph. And staph is a very, you know, serious problem in hospitals. So, you know, I don't know if it's a practical thing to have, you know, a hospital smell like a pizza parlor, you know, with a strong oregano smell. But it might work to minimize exposure to staph, which can be very deadly in hospital settings. You know, methicillin-resistant staph aureus or MRSA has been a big problem. And so that actually there have been some studies. There are some studies that suggest it may have an antiviral effect. And in fact, so it, look, the answer is we don't know. We don't know how much even, you know, a 200-pound adult should take to afford protection. And, you know, I'm not a pediatrician, so it's hard to extrapolate to a kid. I will say this, is that regicillin is kind of strong. And, you know, a small kid might find it, you know, even though it's in a capsule, you know, they might get an upset tummy, you know, from taking that.
And especially if you take it on an empty stomach.
Yeah, it'd be best
not
with
recommended.
Food. Best with food, because it is strong. It could be a bit of an irritant.
It can cause nausea if you take it on an empty stomach. I've seen that happen.
However, you know, just again, this is anecdotal, is that when I was in Tortola, you know, we went at a time where we weren't sure that whether this pandemic was going to explode. It was sort of like the last hurrah before they closed down air travel. And we just kind of got in through the eye of the needle and got back, you know, when they were closing down the airports. So I brought all kinds of things down, and including some liquid oregano. And, you know, just because we were a little concerned, you know, and there was a 4-year-old with us. And we put a couple of drops of liquid oregano in his water. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I don't know, maybe added a couple of drops of juice because we don't want him drinking tons of juice because it's just such a calorie bomb. And it kind of camouflaged the oregano taste, and he got a little bit of oregano that way. Mm. And, you know, we sort of had that, like, oregano Shirley Temple there, you know, that we made for him. And that may be a way to get kids to take some, and, you know, there may, yeah. I mean, again, is this a bulwark against coronavirus? And, you know, who knows? We don't have enough experience to say that.
Right.
And,
but it's certainly in the arsenal of things to help the community.
Yeah, potentially. Yeah, I mean, certainly, you know, for GI pathogens, you know, it might be mm-hmm. help. I mean, that was another consideration. Is, you know, you go someplace, you know, the food is a little strange, and, you know, sometimes people get Montezuma's revenge. And there may be some potential for it to inhibit the proliferation of the bacteria that cause diarrheal diseases. You know, that there's something to be said for that.
I would include, for anybody who's prone to any traveler's diarrhea or any kind of Montezuma's revenge, is to bring along essential formula,
Right. That's a wonderful, you know, precaution, because we want to mm-hmm. put beneficial bacteria in because they actually have an inhibitory effect against pathogenic bacteria. So, protective effects against that. Okay. Let's take another question.
Please. Yeah, we've got, this is interesting. This comes from Meyer. I take a medication that's on the anticholinergic cognitive burden scale.
Mm-hmm.
I've been taking it for over 25 years, and I expect to be on it for life. It's ranked in the highest score category for a 50% higher risk for dementia and a 26% increased risk for early death. What supplements or nutritional therapies can I take to offset these increased risks?
Okay.
I wish Meyer told us the actual drug that he's on.
Mm-hmm. Well, here's an interesting, you know, I just pulled it up while you were talking. Did you know that there's something called the American Delirium Society?
No.
That's pretty, I mean, that's a good name for like a band name.
Yeah, I was going to say, can I join? All this lockdown has me really punchy.
Yeah. You're not, I don't know if you're delirious enough to meet the criteria. But anyway, it's interesting. The American Delirium Society.org website has a comprehensive list of drugs with possible anticholinergic effects. So let's explain that. Anticholinergic drugs a lot of drugs have this property that may be mm-hmm. either their original intent or it may be an off-target effect. And the cholinergic system has something to do with the parasympathetic nervous system. Which is the rest and digest system of the body, you know, as opposed to the fight or flight system, the sympathetic nervous system. So, a whole lot of medications have this anticholinergic effect. And, the concern is that there's so many of these drugs that so many of these, so many Americans are on, sometimes not just occasional use, but daily use, that over years, there's an anticholinergic cognitive burden, which means that they can deplete brain function either subtly or overtly. And so among them, and I'm just picking at random here, Elavil, which is an old-fashioned antidepressant. Doxepin or Cinequan, which is an antidepressant. Pamelor, which is an antidepressant. And very commonly, these medications that reduce urinary frequency have anticholinergic effects. Even commonly used antidepressants like Paxil have an effect. And what they do is they score them on the basis of, is the effect minor or is it more profound? And so the answer is, I mean, fentanyl, for example, you know, not something that we're going to, you know, condone the use of very much of, but, you know, for people in serious pain, you know, and of course, a lot of people are using fentanyl these days for drug abuse, you know, as a heroin booster, has that effect. So too does, Imodium, you know, Imodium for diarrhea even has that effect.
Oh, wow.
They say that
antihistamines.
Ranitidine or Zantac has this effect. Theophylline has that effect.
Right.
Even warfarin to some extent, to a mild degree. Okay.
What about antihistamines?
Oh, big time. Thank you.
Yeah,
many antihistamines have this effect.
Mm-hmm.
And also some of these sleep medications, you know, because sleep medications utilize antihistamines to knock you out a little bit.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
Benadryl, case in point. Wow.
Yeah. So, without knowing what type of medication he takes, you know, our strategy would be, if he's not happy with the potential side effects of a medication, you know, are there natural substitutes? Can we de-prescribe him, wean him off his medication, and address his whatever concern the medication was designed to meet?
Well, Meyer does say he expects to be on it for life. He's been on it for over 25 years.
It doesn't narrow it down very much.
Yeah.
Yeah. Doesn't narrow it down. So, you know, we know the bladder antispasmodics have it, antidepressants, certainly antipsychotics, you know, epilepsy medication, seizure.
So what would we suggest for him to, you know, counteract a little bit of that anticholinergic?
I can't say because, you know, if you counteract the anticholinergic effect, you might counteract the medication. You know, so
It's not like you want to give him acetylcholine.
Yeah.
Or phosphatidylserine, but maybe ginkgo wouldn't interact, you know, or interfere.
I think that's innovative thinking, but without knowing the actual situation, we can't say, oh, you know, just take some, you know, phosphatidylcholine and it'll, you know, it'll overcome the anticholinergic. I mean, look, that's plausible because, we know that choline is important for brain function, and deficiencies of choline are associated with cognitive problems. And some people, and I've seen this with our genetic testing that we're doing on some patients, some people have very weak choline pathways, and they need more choline to overcome these weak pathways. So, I mean, that's a great thought, but I don't know if it's applicable here, you know?
Okay, good points.
I mean, that's sometimes what we have to do. Sometimes we have to improvise. We have to think out of the box. But, you know, again, without really strong direction or evidence, it would be, I think, a little too cavalier to say, oh, you know, just take choline. That choline will overcome your anticholinergic effects. Maybe, you know, that's hypothetical.
Yeah.
Yep.
Meyer, best of luck to you, and thank you for that very thoughtful question.
Yeah, indeed. And I wrote an article about this a while back, and I think it was under the title of, like, Brain Stealers or something like that. But, you know, for those of you interested, there's a website, AmericanDeliriumSociety.org.
And, I'm going to go check it out.
They're taking applications now, I think.
I'm going to submit an application. I've been on lockdown too long, and now we've got...
They're very selective, though. They're very selective about who they accept.
Oh, I'll pass.
Okay. All right. I'm Dr. Ronald Hoffman, and when we return, more of your questions. Radioprogram@AOL.com, the destination for questions for our weekly Q&A with Layla, and this is the Intelligent Medicine Podcast.